focus not on being their best friend, focus on being the one that's getting them better results.
Conquer Local.
It's really a breath of fresh air. Good times.
I help leaders go from anxiety to authority under pressure.
And then let's go and get it.
It's an ecosystem.
The hardest part here is going to be getting me to shut up on this one.
Conquer Local with Vendasta, hosted by Jeff Tomlin.
Welcome to the Conquer Local podcast. Our show features successful sales leaders, marketers, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs who will inspire you with their success stories. Each episode is packed with practical strategies as our guests share their secrets to achieving their dreams. Listen in and learn highlights of their remarkable accomplishments and get tips to revamp, rework, and reimagine your business. Whether you're a small business owner, a marketer, or aspiring entrepreneur, the Conquer Local podcast is your ultimate guide to dominating your local market. Tune in now to take your business to the next level. I'm Jeff Tomlin, and on this episode, we're pleased to welcome Joe Ingram. Joe is a renowned sales expert and a consultant with over 30 years of experience and with over $1.7 billion in sales to his name. He's revolutionized sales techniques across various industries and excels in simplifying complex strategies, making them accessible to professionals of all levels through his engaging edutainment approach. I love it. Blending humor and real-life scenarios. His expertise spans many industries, offering comprehensive guidance to sales teams, business development teams, and service and management teams. Beyond the automotive realm, Joe's prowess extends to diverse sectors, including real estate, software sales, moving companies, chiropractors, and automotive, consistently delivering remarkable results. Get ready, Conquerors, for Joe Ingram, coming up next on this week's episode of the Conquer Local podcast. And his podcast is Sales Genius. It's Joe Ingram joining us here in the Conquer Local podcast. How you doing, Joe? Welcome.
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for having me on. Completely honored to be here.
Well, honored to have you. How you doing?
Things are good, and the sun's out. It's about 70 degrees, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you would be. I'm in Northern Canada. I'm not 70 degrees, but I won't complain.
California, we don't know what weather is.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm not complaining.
Like, it's supposed to change during the year. What happened?
Yeah, I know, right? So, well, we tell ourselves that the seasons are rejuvenating. That's the positive spin on the ice cold winter. Well, hey, really, it's awesome to have you here. I love having the sales guys on my podcast and talking about sales stuff. Hey, you've got a fantastic background. You started in the automotive space. And so tell me a little bit about the path, you know, from there to where you're at now, what that looked like and how you got from A to B.
Sure. Absolutely. So, I cut my teeth in sales selling, you know, candy bars for Little League, but nobody ever counts that for baseball Little League, but you had to do
that. That's sales.
Yeah.
That's sales.
It is. It's hardcore sales. Yes. But it teaches you to play your warm market to your advantage.
Did you outsell all the other kids?
Not, for some reason, I was always in the like number two, number three spot. Somebody always had, you know, the leverage to a dad that worked in a corporation that had 1,000 employees that they could go get their boxes done.
Yeah.
But no. So
I remember doing that when I was a kid. I grew up bowling, right? And we had to sell chocolate covered almonds, and I took great pride in selling out my box. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
That's
you.
Fantastic. No, it's all good. So, electrical engineer that went into sales, and so I went into sales within a criminal defense law firm first, building inside teams, outside teams, was very successful. Then transitioned to automotive. When I got into automotive, literally, I went to work for a large corporation that had 300 dealerships across the United States. And so for me, coming from aerospace manufacturing when I was an engineer, I was like, wow, this red tape over here in automotive is nothing like I had with the government. And going through all this stuff. So it was easier to excel and expect certain things that would happen. And the processes just made more sense to me from where I came from. And so I excelled really quickly. I took dealerships that were doing 500 or 600 units a month and took them to 1,000 units a month. Took them to become number one, number two, number three in the nation, right? Out of 20,000 dealerships. So it was one of the things that you want, you know, for me, I found it my passion for cars and then the passion to win and, you know, dominate. Those came up pretty easy. And in that industry, it was good. And so I did it several times throughout my years in the automotive space, where I ended up taking dealerships. I've taken several stores to 1,000 units a month. In context, the average dealership across the United States sells 89. So I get to laugh and go, that's more than 10X, Grant. Yeah, but that's
big numbers. That's
so that built me the brand and the knowledge base that I could help other dealerships. So then I went into automotive training at a time where one of the owners decided I made it look too easy when I turned around his dealership in less than a year to being profitable. He thought, great, I'll give this job to one of my best friends who's never done it because Joe's got it dialed in. So he gave it to him and let me go. And at that point, I said, okay, I talked with my bride. She said, just go train people. That's what you love to do. Go and do that. And I was like, okay. And so because of my knowledge in the business, because of the turnaround I just did, and to spite the owner that gave away my job, I literally went to all of the competitors around that location, because there was 8 of them within 30 miles. I went to all of them and say, half off training, so that we can make sure this guy suffers and doesn't have the market share that I built for him. And so, and I had 5 of the 8 say yes. So that started my company and off I went in automotive. And then from there, I had other people reach out and say, hey, you're really good at that stuff, the sales stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm not arguing. And then they said, can you do it in this arena? Can you do it with this? Can you do it with this? And then I was like, I think it's going to be the same. I think a lot of them are copy paste. There's going to be some uniqueness added to it, but let's go play the game. And so I ended up in multiple industries just because sales is about people. And since sales is about people, you can swap the product out on a good salesperson and they will run with it. And so it's just those best practices, copy paste into another industry. But I did software sales, video gaming platforms. I worked with video gaming platforms on how to get people to bump within the game to buy new things and stuff like that. So, and again, playing the psychology game, personality game, things like that is what I love to do. And that's what, that's how I ended up where I'm at now, which is training companies on sales and increasing profitability.
I love that. You know, I'm just starting to learn this. Tony Robbins talks about patterns in life and the three competencies, being able to use patterns, being able to implement patterns, and then being able to develop new patterns or recognize, implement and develop new ones on your own. And so I get what you're saying. You know, in sales, there are patterns to success. And that's cool that you were able to replicate that across different industries. You, in doing sales training, you have an edutainment, you call it, approach. And I love that moniker. But by the way, but before you tell us what that's all about, I was having a chat with the crew. I was telling them about this conversation I was having with my son. I was saying to my son's name is Jack. Saying, Jack, I've got to create a little bit more humor in the podcast and make it a little more entertaining. And he says, well, Dad, you're not really that funny. And I said, what do you mean? I'm funny. And he goes, what do you mean, Dad? Funny haha or funny looking? And I said,
it's not all about looks. Come on. Yeah.
And since when do you know Joe Pesci?
Right. Exactly.
Tell us about the edutainment approach.
So it was something that I instinctually do as I went through life. Okay. In my house, you had to be a smart aleck. You had to have humor, right? I learned from my dad early on, who owned his own business, when people, my dad owned gas stations, but people would drive 3-4 miles out of their way in the morning commute to come pull into the driveway. And I've been pumping gas since I was 7 years old working there. So all of a sudden these people pull up and they pull into the full serve side, honk the horn. And I'm like, you want gas? They're like, no, no, I need to talk to Joe Senior.
Yeah.
And then he would come out and they'd go, okay, I'm running late, but give me the joke of the day so that when I get to the office, I can be funny. Right. And so he would come out, tell them a joke, they'd laugh, and then they'd go another mile or so and get back on the freeway and head to work. And so, but I also realized all of those people also brought their vehicle to the back shop that we had, the repair shop.
Yeah.
They always had their car with us. And I was like, wow. So dad is funny, teaches them how they can be funny. And then all of a sudden they trust him with their vehicle and their work, where they could go to a dealership or go someplace else. And amazing. So for me, I was on a live stream with the actor Glenn Morshower. He was in 24 and a whole bunch of other shows.
Yeah.
And he looked up and he said, Joe, you are the personification of the word edutainment. And I was like, wow, thank you. And I go, I have no idea what that means. And so I sat down and then I looked at it, it's education and entertainment put together. And then when he said that, I was like, wow. And I look at everything I do. I always start trainings. If I'm going to educate you, we're going to laugh. We're going to have fun. And because the second I can get you to laugh, if you laugh with me, okay, or even at me, I'm okay with that. But if you laugh, it checks the ego. You can't laugh at something somebody says and still maintain I'm better than you.
Yeah.
So in that capacity, I get to break the barrier down. Now I know once you're laughing that I can now input things into your mind that goes in unfiltered. And so that helps me to get that in. So they learn more, they take away more, and they can implement it sooner. Because they're not going with the preface of, I don't like you, you're not like me, I'm better, right? As soon as you take away that block, then all of a sudden you have access to the unconscious and you get to
I love that. By the way, I've seen that in you know, all sorts of different examples in life. I go to, you know, been to tons and tons and tons of conferences, and, you know, someone gets up on stage and starts giving the, you know, the conference talk, everyone's heads in their laptops, and someone gets up on stage and, you know, says something entertaining, whether it's something funny or they get the crowd's attention, and all of a sudden, yeah, you can put, I get it, you can put stuff into their head and they're receptive. I love that. You've got a moniker here. Never be normal. Normal people get normal paychecks. So I love that. But before I turn over to you to talk about that a little bit, I've got a story from my background. When I got started in the software space back in 2002 in a real estate software company, and our CEO and my partner here, Brennan King, and I worked at that company together, and we started going to conferences, little software company in Western Canada, and we started going to these big real estate shows down in the United States. And it's really hard to break into a new audience, big executives. How do you break
the ice? Especially when you talk funny.
It's exactly, especially when we can't say about.
Yes, exactly.
And so one thing we did before one conference, and I don't know, I don't remember it being conscious or not, but we got these really loud shirts and everyone else is dressed in suits. And the one thing I noticed is that all of a sudden in the networking events, we were way more approachable than everybody else. And so what went from being, you know, work to go and put ourselves out there and introduce ourselves to people. People would come to us and say, hey, who are the Canadians over there in the crazy shirts? You know, that's my little story around it. So I love this saying, never be normal. Normal people get normal paychecks. Tell me a bit about your perspective on that.
Perfect. I sat down, I started tracking the successful, who's the top 1% in their industries, right? And then I looked at all the things and I said, okay, we can all agree that Michael Jordan had a different mindset than everybody else. And it wasn't just to be good at something, it was to be the best at something. And then I looked and I said, his check compared to everybody else on the same team was a lot larger. And then when you look at it, and again, I'm not a sports freak. I just look to see where the money was. And I'm like, all these top CEOs, like I go, Bill Gates, not your normal programmer. Okay. And I'm like, so if you look at it, when you say, regardless of political affiliation, right, Trump as a businessman was not normal in the way he looks at things. If you and I, Jeff, we look at an empty lot, we go, oh, that's an empty lot. He looks over and sees Trump Tower, right? Yeah. Bill Gates looks at something, you go, look at this. He's like, I can probably get that to fit on a pin of a head, the head of a pin. That's what I want to do. And you're like, what? What? How do we do this? And so I looked at it and started tracking everything. And I said, everybody takes an approach. Not necessarily is it a disruptive approach. It's not like they're going, I have to destroy an industry to do this. But you have to be able to see things at a level that is different. And you can't say, I'm doing the same thing. So my story with that was my kids grew up with me telling them that, going through that. And so they could never come home and say, Dad, can I get this like scooter? Because everybody's got one. Because as soon as they said that, I said, no. I'm like, that would make you normal. Right. And yeah. So they always had to come up with because no one else can afford it or because this. And so they'd always have to be creative enough to give me an excuse. But I got that phone call from the ex-wife one day after school. She's driving back with the kids and she calls me and says, oh, you want to know what your son did? And I'm like, well, let's see. He took number one, like in the state for math and English on the test that they give to all the students. I'm assuming you took credit for that and I don't get credit for that. So what did he do wrong? Right. And she says, oh, my goodness, the teacher told him, go sit down. Don't be disruptive in class. So he said, OK, I'll go sit down. But he was helping other students understand what he had already grasped and they weren't getting it. So with the teacher. So he went to go help them. And so she sat down, and said, go sit down. He's like, OK, goes and sits down. So they continue to ask him questions from his desk. And then she says, she looks at him. She goes, Mason, she's like, seriously. Sit down and be normal for 5 minutes. So that, and he goes, he looks at her and he goes, I'm going to sit down and just be quiet because I think that's what you want. This is like fifth grade. And he says, because I believe that's what you want, but I can't be normal. And she's like, don't talk back. He goes, I'm not being disrespectful. He's very well spoken. He's like, I'm not being disrespectful. He goes, I will just sit here. And she goes, be normal for 5 minutes. He goes, I won't be normal. And she goes, do you want to go to the office? He goes, normal people get normal paychecks and I can never be normal. And so she wrote him up and sent him to the principal's office. So they get this thing back. So as
thanks,
she
Dad.
Says that, I'm sitting there as his mother's telling me that, I go, hell yeah. Right. And she goes, what? And he's sitting next to her and he goes, told you he wouldn't be mad. And I was like, you realize why he got sent to the principal's office? She goes, why? I go, because he called out the teacher who's normal. And that made her say, ah, you need to go someplace else. I said, I am so beyond proud. You have no idea.
Oh.
And so she was like, oh, that's part of the problem. I'm like, sure it is.
Not to put you on the spot, but can you think of a time when either your team or someone you've been working with has sort of challenged the status quo in either their marketing or their business practice and it created a sort of an outsized reward for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So like one of my clients right now, so everybody knows AI, we all talk about robots taking over the world, right? And stuff, but the earlier adapters to something. So when I got access to ChatGPT, I jumped right in. I called another guy who's a sales trainer on the East Coast, and we were giving it the same question to see if we got the same answer, right? And we started embracing it and going through. And then I have clients that are like, I'm not giving my business to AI. And I'm like, okay, so normal is what they're thinking. Don't give it to it because they're afraid of what it's going to do with nobody checking it. So I went and created mini coaches, right, that are all AI based. So it requires the employee to ask the coach for the question or to write an email or to do things and give it to them. And it'll give it to them as if it was me coaching them. So I built that out. That's not the never ending normal part. It's the client who goes, let me try it. I'll do that because it has people involvement along with the AI. And so then all of a sudden he comes back and goes, what just happened to this department? So we have that department. You know, I love the virtual prospect becoming a sold product or service. So the people that are reaching out over the internet, sending you requests or social media, chats, texts, things like that, where you're not face to face, all of a sudden, all of their responses became better because it was almost as if I did all the responses for the hundreds of requests that came in. And we saw an increase of 3%. And on the best side, 8% closing on lead to a sold product. And so to them, they were like, that literally changed my entire business because of it. And I told them, I said, see, normal people get normal paychecks because your competitors aren't doing that. The fact that the customer who's virtual to you got a better response that kept their perception of you up here meant you don't have to discount, means you don't have to do any of the stuff that is there that everybody normally has to do. And so, but you're talking a million plus a year to one person's business.
But that, like, that's fascinating. You know, people have conceptions about, like, or, you know, ideas around how, what sales is like. So tell me, like, is there a set of misconceptions that you commonly see that people have about sales and the sales process? Yeah, if they can break through these things, they can drastically increase their performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, and here's one of the things that holds a lot of people back. If you've ever given an excuse to somebody, right, and you said, well, I just don't have the time, and they said, okay, then your brain goes, hey, that one works. Right. And it keeps those things locked up in your head. So your preconceived notion as you walk in as a salesperson, whatever excuse you've ever given to get out of something, you have to respect it from the prospect. So when the prospect tells you they don't have enough money, they don't have enough time, don't have whatever, you're like, well, I wouldn't want anybody to call me on the BS. So I'm going to have to tell them I understand. And that's it. Right. Most people view salespeople as a hurdle to getting a product, which is why the models of Amazon or eBay or somebody works better, because we took out the fact that you're being sold to so obviously. And so to me, the answer is, if you view sales as bad, right? And I'm not one of those people that go, oh my goodness, and trust me, I come from automotive, right? So everybody thinks the used car sales guy is out to just take your head off and their hands in your pocket the second you say hi. But it's not that case. And my goal is transform everybody's sales process to be more communicative as opposed to being more, do you want to buy or not? And I think that's where we lose a lot of people, is that our intentions are wrong, which means they feel it and they decide they don't want, I can't do anything with you. I tell people 4 steps, like, listen, believe, and buy. That works for every friendship you've ever had, any relationship you have with a spouse, right? Whether your kids get along with you, right? All of these things happen, but it's the same thing in sales. If I don't like you, we're not getting to sold. We'll get to sold 23% of the time. And that's because you're the only one with the product, or you made it cheap enough for me to tolerate you.
There you go.
Right. But the rest of the time you have to, the 77% of the time, it's because you started with the like, made it through the listen. And then I believe what you're saying. And now I can trust you enough to buy.
Joe, I love your perspective on things, you know, and entertain, be humorous, be different. Don't be normal. Your approach, the way that you think about sales and what sales should be. Give the audience 3 takeaways. And if there's 2 or 3 things that you want them to think about, leaving the conversation here, what would those things be?
So I'm going to tell you guys right now, the way you communicate face-to-face does not work on email, text, and phone. Okay? And most people don't realize that. I have to change my language in every one of those mediums.
Yeah.
And so as looking at that, again, you're texting somebody, only if you've already known them and met them can you get a visualization of that person. Okay? And so I tell people all the time, you need to be in the direct communication with somebody, but remember the medium. So that's the first thing I'm going to say, because your language has to change, right? The second thing I'm going to tell everybody is that you are responsible for results, okay? I do not believe sales is a relationship game, okay? I argue with all the big wigs that go, it's all about relationship. I go, it's all about results. My relationships come after I've consistently delivered you results. So focus not on being their best friend, focus on being the one that's getting them better results. And then the friendship will actually be real. Because I don't want to say, give me a check because you like me. Right.
Yeah.
I want to say, give me a check because of the ROI on what you get from what I do.
Yeah.
And so that's what I look at and say, you need to be focused on that one. Right. And then the third thing I'm going to tell everybody is understand, this is the takeaway. It's not about who you are. It's about who you need to be for the prospect to buy from you. Okay. So we are all cut from the same cloth. There's four personality types. We all share some part of the same. Utilize the part that matches with the person you're dealing with. So I'm not telling anybody be fake. I'm saying utilize that part of your personality that person needs you to be so that they can feel comfortable enough to buy from you. Instead of going, I'm me, take it or leave it. Well, great. Guess what? You sell 20% of the time. Because you can only relate to 25% of the people and not all of them are ready to buy.
Love it. Words of wisdom from Joe Ingram. Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. If people wanted to reach out to you, continue the conversation, how do they connect with you?
So the easiest way to find me anywhere on the web is go to thegeniuslinks.com. So genius.com. That's a Linktree page. It's got sample training. It's got a link to every social media site, products, all kinds of stuff that are there. And then for your listeners, Jeff, if they go to the very bottom, I'll make it active when we get off of the show. At the very bottom of the page, they'll see a box that doesn't look like it has anything written on it, but it very lightly says secret stuff. So if they click on the secret stuff, it'll take them to a hidden page on my website. They can find eBooks. They can find presentations I've done, other videos and things like that, that could help them get to the next sale.
I love it. It was an absolute pleasure and honor having you on the podcast and learned a lot from you. Hope that we can do this again in the future. I'd love to have you back and keep picking your brain. And I know that the listeners would as well.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm completely honored to be here. I'm glad you made time for me.
That was a great conversation. Joe Ingram, my best to you.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Wow, there you have it. Now, Joe's entrepreneurial journey, starting from an early age and evolving from selling candy bars for Little League to becoming a sales leader, highlights the significance of adapting sales patterns across different industries. Now, I love the edutainment approach, blending humor and educational content as a strategy in engaging and training individuals. You know, the motto, never be normal, normal people get normal paychecks, really resonates with a guy that thinks, you know, a shirt can be more than just a shirt. Another nugget is Joe's forward-thinking use of AI. As he created mini coaches for sales departments, I think it highlights the transformative power of technology in sales. The proof is in the pudding as his approach shows significant improvements in customer responses and closing rates. Finally, Joe challenges the traditional notion that sales are solely relationship-based, as he's a guy that focuses on results above all else. If you've enjoyed Joe Ingram's episode discussing sales training, keep the conversation going and revisit some of the older episodes from the archives. Check out episode 633, Transforming Sales Coaching with AI with Michael Miranda, or episode 623, The PepsiCo Way, Lifelong Learning and Leadership with Jorge Elzade. Until next time, I'm Jeff Tomlin. Get out there and be awesome.
You've been listening to the Conquer Local podcast presented by Vendasta. Tune in next week for a new episode. Guest discovery and produced by Suleiman Adam. Marketing by Rory Lawford, Brandon Moore, and Suleiman Adam. Executive producers Brendan King, Jeff Tomlin, and Suleiman Adam. Recorded at Vendasta headquarters on the Canadian prairies.